Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. This is a very exciting day for me. My guest today, I first heard of in 2008 when I was still in Hollywood, and he's a big filmmaker out there and a lot of other things. But he started to buck the system a long time ago and say, I'm going to make the films I want to make, and I don't really care about the system, and I'll just recreate it myself. And since then, he's gone on to do so much. Plandemic was a game changer during, probably the three hardest years in our lifetime. And he just has continued Plandemic 2, and now he's back with The Great Awakening. He is an amazing, amazing human being and a friend of mine. Thank you for joining me, Mickey Willis.
Thank you, Mel. It's great to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you. People don't realize how long you have been on the front lines of saying you're going to do the work you want to do the way you want to do it, and you're going to do it good enough that you're going to beat the system and people will see it. So let's talk a little bit about your background and when you first started saying, I don't make films for you, I make films for the people.
Yeah, that happened. I know the exact day, the exact moment. I was at the World Trade Center, 9/11, 2001, and I did search and rescue and body recovery for 3 days. And I had a really profound snap to grid that took place. And suddenly, as I returned to Hollywood, everything that was important to me prior to that experience, suddenly I just couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't. Had a really great career making music videos, and I looked at all the legacy of my work, and I asked myself, I said, when I have children one day, which I now have two amazing boys, what would I be most proud to show them? And that was shocking, that there was almost nothing of my repertoire of work that I would be proud to show my sons, my children. And, music videos with girls in bikinis on boats and all this stuff. And I just thought, selling products that I necessarily wouldn't use or advise anyone to really use themselves, and just part of that machinery. And so I just couldn't do it anymore. And I just became allergic to all of it. And I left. I put everything I had in storage and went and lived on a vineyard. My friend had a little guest house on a vineyard and lived there for about a year and a half and kind of reinvented myself and then came back into Hollywood and started to do things my own way.
Yeah, you did. And people noticed you had the Elevate Film Festival before anyone realized that you could do your own thing. So, I mean, I knew that. And it was a risk, when you were first going out there and making the movies you wanted to make and putting them out there and actually getting people to come see them. This was a real shock to the system, I think, in Hollywood. You made a big difference, at least. I'm a little younger, not that much younger, but as a filmmaker out there myself, people knew about Mickey Willis because Mickey Willis was not following orders. And you took it from there and became somebody who sought out the truth wherever you could find it. And your first movie to go really big, tell the audience a little bit about that, because you were putting out films not just about 9/11, but also about the media and about them deceiving the people. So what was the first time that you realized, they're watching me? They know, because I know you were put on a list and people were trying to shut you down. And I think people don't understand how hard that is. And also at the same time, instead of doing what many people that we know did, which was, comply, you went totally the opposite direction.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up. And I think it's really important for everyone to know that is really the move, because the moment you cower, the moment you bend, you bow, then they know they got you. And so when the pressure comes at you, move forward stronger. And so that was a choice I made. I realized that, it's like, they're okay. All right. I'm on the list now. They're coming after me.
Right.
And, but that, as they say, that means you're over the target. You're actually making a difference. Otherwise they leave you alone.
Right.
And so you have to measure, what really matters to you. What are your values? And so is it just being comfortable? Or especially as a father, I now have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
I could be selfish if I didn't have children and just say, well, whatever, I have 40, 50 years left on the planet. Let's just ride it out and let these people deal with the next, century or so of hell. But when you have children, it becomes a different story, because you realize that it's the little things that we're fighting for. It's obviously the big things, our freedom, our security, all of that. But for me, it's remembering the simple human things that I want my children to have the freedom to experience. I want them to not just be glued to a digital screen, but to know what it's like to go out and hunt crawdads and catch frogs and ride their bikes safe in their neighborhood. And so it's fighting for that stuff. It's fighting for human connection. It's the stuff that we're being driven away from, of just really being present to each other and listening to each other, whether we agree or not. Those human qualities are the things that really make us uniquely spectacular. And those are the things that are being chipped away at, so that if they're all gone, if our memory is erased along with our history, and we don't really have any markers to understand how far we've come, how we've evolved. And so they can just kind of mold us into whatever they want us to be in the future. And I don't know about you, but I'm not cool with that.
Oh, you know, I'm not cool with that either. So about 3 years ago, I saw you and I was talking to you and I had just seen Plandemic, and I was so happy because we were on the same page and we were out there together. And you brought your personal story into it. But tell me a little bit about when you realized not only were you going to make the first Plandemic, but you were going to expose everything. And I think it was the first time that people like me felt like our voice was heard because of your movie and because it went so wide. So what was the impetus to start filming for Plandemic 1?
Yeah, well, I was actually in the middle of directing another documentary called The Narrative. And after 30 years or so of being involved in and witnessing, just like you, being a veteran of the Hollywood system and seeing the game that's played, and having had so many experiences in boardrooms with high-level ad executives and watched the psychological manipulation that they put into selling their products, and without any concern of what that message might be doing to the psyche of their own people, their own children, their own families.
Right.
I thought, you know, it's really time to expose this. As I say in my latest movie, Plandemic 3, The Great Awakening, that if there's any industry that deserves to be labeled as and charged with domestic terrorism, it's the media.
Oh, yeah.
The damage they've done to divide us and just lie to us, and they have, you know, mental health issues that we're dealing with right now are largely caused by the confusion that has been birthed through the mouthpiece of Big Pharma. And so I had, you know, going all the way back to fully answer your question, is I had a brother that died of AZT, which was a medicine prescribed by Anthony Fauci, and it killed hundreds of thousands of innocent people, but they were all guaranteed that it was going to save their lives, and it killed them. And 34 days later, my mom died of bad cancer treatments. And so that really was an awakening for me as a man in my early 20s at the time to understand that there was something really wrong with Western medicine in itself. And so I always held that in my heart. And then when the pandemic was declared, I'm in the middle of directing The Narrative, and I'm working with a lot of top whistleblowers. And because of what was happening, because of the disruption that Trump was to the political system, all the, you know, witch hunts and Russiagate and all this stuff wasn't working. All these whistleblowers were saying the same thing. They said, hold tight, buckle up. Something major is going to come. They have no other choice but to, you know, to really activate something that's, and they, one of them actually said, of 9/11 proportion, you know, be aware and get your house in order. And then 2 weeks later, suddenly the virus is going, you know, and then we're on, you know, all the lockdowns happen. And then I see Anthony Fauci resurface, and I knew everyone, my brother was gay, and his community, everyone would talk about this little Napoleon bastard named Anthony Fauci that was killing people. And so I thought, is that the same guy? And then I remembered I had this meeting with this scientist, Judy Michalowicz, a year and a half earlier, and she talked about Anthony Fauci. And I just assumed that that was a conversation from the past, and he must be out of office by now, because there's no way that they'd allow him to hold such a delicate and important position to govern people's health when he has killed hundreds of thousands of people with his decisions. So anyway, it turns out he's, you know, there he is, right, back again on the pedestal. And so I called Judy and I said, you know, what's going on? And of course, you know, Judy in her own unfiltered, lovely way started to tell me what she thought was going on. And I said, why don't you come to my studio and let's record this, and I'll cut it together and we'll get it out there and see if we can wake some people up. And that became Plandemic 1, which there's no way I could have predicted what happened after that.
Yeah, but so many of us were sitting out here, not enough, but so many that when Plandemic came out, it was like, thank God, somebody's actually fighting back. Somebody's saying something. I'd been familiar with your work already. I wasn't surprised it was you, but a lot of people hadn't heard of you and hadn't known your work. And you also put out a book where you talk about your brother and your mother and your feelings. And I like what you bring up right now, because I feel that we're in a situation where there's an addiction now that has been created to chaos, to the next thing. And every day I wake up and I think, oh my God, they are feeding the addiction. And now with social media and big tech and then censorship and all of that, they're manipulating. It's crazy that you were working on the narrative right when this came in, because what they are doing to our mental health, especially to the children, is so sick and twisted. And yet people don't really still to this day still are kind of malleable to whatever's coming next, I think, because they've created such a psychosis, such a desire to jump on to the next fear, this trauma-based programming that you and I know is part of something that they've done for centuries, actually. But now in real time with big tech's advancements, we are at a place where people are waiting for the next shakeup, and we're in a really dangerous time in America right now, because since you did the first Plandemic, they've doubled and tripled down. And so the second movie came into play when your first movie was out there. So tell me a little bit about the second movie and why you felt like you had to continue down that road.
Plandemic 2, Indoctrination, is the second movie featuring a lot of great speakers, but primarily Dr. David Martin. And he was one of many interviews that I conducted as we were putting Plandemic 2 together. And I had him on Zoom because at that time everyone in the world was in lockdown. There was still some travel that could happen, but we were allowing people to stay at their home and stay on Zoom. And I got about an hour, 45 minutes or so into the interview with him over Zoom. And I was just absolutely blown away by his information, his ability to regurgitate patent numbers from the 70s and 80s and 90s. And so I stopped the interview short, the Zoom interview, and I said, I think you need to get on a plane and get out here right now. Because I realized that he would probably be the foundation of the movie. And it turned out to be true. And so this is a person who has been tracking white collar crime and everything that happens in the name of philanthropy and patents. That are a lot of the crimes are hidden within patents, right? So everything is hidden in plain sight, as we've all heard before, and
right.
And a lot of that plain sight happens in numerically through patents, and a lot of these people that are really running our corrupt medical system are ultimately, profiting from creating and monopolizing the business and owning patents, so that they are really the only game in town. And then you make a whole world dependent upon your product, and then you have the patents so that nobody can compete with you. And it's a pretty incredible business model if you're wicked enough to work that way. And so we created that Plandemic 2, which was longer, twice the length of Plandemic 1, and that one really focused on the true origins of the virus, the true origins of the gain of function research. We traced it back to blow the whistle on the NIH and Anthony Fauci and the WHO. And if people haven't seen that, if your listeners haven't seen it, all of my films are free at plandemicseries.com. I highly recommend watching that movie. And down at the end of the page at the website, we also cut out a lot of snippets from the movie. So we have sections that are like, the real takedown of Bill Gates, of the WHO, of the CDC. And you can look at them just in little units there if you want to learn about each right. Different subject matter. Because it was really, for me, it was like, let's really, look at the pillars of this, what props up this entire corrupt industry. And show people that, that the director of the WHO was a mafia, horrible person that was part of almost a terrorist, really.
Yeah.
And part of a terrorist organization. And then they, Bill Gates, with the help of Bill Gates, he pushed him into a position so they could control him, because they have, dirt on all these people, and they pick the people that are already doing bad stuff. So it's not like they have to corrupt them. They're already corrupt. And so we wanted to show people, like, this is who you're listening to. This is the person running this, making the decisions. Why would we trust a gangster like this with a horrible past of genocide?
Yeah.
You know, and that person's running the WHO. It's crazy once you understand all of that. So the movie really pulls back the curtain on who's pulling the strings of that corrupt system.
Yeah. And then as we go forward, you and I have discussed in the past, I discuss on my show all the time, that it really is a plandemic. I call it the plandemic on everything because I can't call it anything else. And what you bring up looking back now is the timing of when this was released and what was going on. I talk a lot about something that the globalist elite strategist did about a year before they dropped the plandemic was something called the Transition Integrity Project, where they were going to get rid of Donald Trump no matter what. They were going to take back control, to go back onto this path of global governance. That was their end game and goal. They're still pushing towards it now, full speed ahead. They've gotten even more, I think what's happening right now is that the great resetters, or the puppet masters, as I call them, are in a panic because they're pushing everything so fast, just in time for your Great Awakening movie to come out, which is why I hope everyone that's watching this goes and sees this, because he ties it all together. And you have to understand, the term conspiracy theory has been used all the way back since the Fraudulent Warren Commission report came out, for anyone that questioned the government's responsibility behind the murder of JFK. And it has been used again and again. But through Mickey's three movies and the one that's out now, The Plandemic Great Awakening, you can kind of see exactly what happened in a way that just tells the story perfectly. But what we have to understand is that they do not care about us. The United States, I believe, right now is in a really serious, dangerous place, because where we are is, we are the last country that, if they can pull our country apart and lead us down this horrible path using whatever means necessary, infiltration, narrative manipulation, psychological war, economic war, all of this, and America does fall, the whole world will be, I believe, swallowed by this, I call the octopus of global control. And there will be no way back. And this is why the American people really have to right now, I think, put aside their allegiances, their teams, their red and blue and all of that, and come together as we the people and say, you're not going to do this to our country. We are not going to become Venezuela or part of a global governance system. So right now we are at, I believe, the Great Awakening last stand. How do you feel about, first of all, before we talk about the current movie, how do you feel about where we are? Because it does seem that worldwide, which your movie has gone worldwide, it does seem that worldwide people are really awakening on a grand scale. But I still feel that America, maybe because people haven't really felt it as much in their own daily lives, doesn't fully grasp the way I see it is like being on a dark platform in Long Island waiting for the train. And, you know, you're standing out there, it's totally dark, and you can see the light from the train like way far away. So, you know, the train's coming, but you don't hear it and you don't feel it. And, you know, you know it's coming because you can see that light all the way down there. But as the train gets closer and closer, which is happening now because they're speeding it up at the WHO, they're speeding it up at the UN, they're speeding it up at the World Economic Forum. Obviously, the captured government in D.C. is on it. I feel like once the train gets too close, you know, that is very bad for us. So if you can just talk a little bit about where you think we are and what you think we, the people of the United States, really need to understand at this moment in time.
We are in a cultural revolution. And so if you understand the history of, say, Mao Zedong and what he did to fully capture the 1.4 billion people that are now under the complete stranglehold of communism in China, the steps that it takes to get people there, we are undergoing right now, and we have been for a number of decades. And so it's an erasure of our culture, because that becomes an erasing of our memory. And when we forget who we are, when we forget what we've come from, when we forget the progress that we've made, when we forget all the incredible lessons and wisdom that we've gained from making all the mistakes that we've made, then we can be very malleable into moving into becoming their soldiers. And so what's happening, the real push behind all of the different, you know, they call it the culture war, and you can call it the, you know, the woke movement or whatever you want to call it. All of that is a very well orchestrated and planned event. And so that creates a state of, you know, division. It creates a confusion of, you know, we have now a generation of young people, you know, saying things like they're in the wrong body, which is just not possible. It's a ridiculous concept to even consider that you're in the wrong body. So, but if you can believe that you're in the wrong body, then there must be a really screwed up creator out there that
right.
is that fallible. And so if it's that fallible, why would you have any kind of belief in a higher power? And because, you know, nature itself is just so flawed. And so there's a war against our nature, what we are, because what we are born with, what this planet provides is everything we need, not just to live, but to thrive. This planet grows all the food and medicine that we will ever need. But if the planet grows it and you can't patent nature, then we have to be then separated from the knowing of that wisdom, such that we become dependent upon synthetic remedies and all of the technocrats and transhumanists out there that are worshiping the God of the digital realm. And because they want to play God, ultimately, that's what's happening, is they want to be in total control. And once everyone is on some kind of digital system currency, once there's a one world government, which is the goal. So you're absolutely right. You know, America, because of the unique experiment that it is, with a constitutional foundation that protects the individual that no country had before, which is the reason that all immigrants escape here. No one escapes to China or North Korea or, you know, Cuba or Venezuela. No one's going in those directions. They all come here. And yet it's Americans who live here who are so entitled and so unaware, who haven't traveled outside the borders, that have been driven to hate their own country. Because if you can lose respect and reverence for your environment, for people itself, that's what's at the root of all this, is what I call, you know, it's dehumanization. So one of the goals of the next movie is rehumanization. Yeah. I leave them with the question, the choice of, right now, it's the choice is between dehumanization and nothing requires us to do nothing, you know, that just let that continue.
Right.
Or rehumanization, which does require one action, and that's to remember, to not let our memories be erased, to remember what we are, who we are, whose we are, why we came here. The stuff we knew as children, Mel, we knew as children, we knew what was possible. We played make-believe and we had these big dreams and we wanted to fly and we wanted to be all these incredible things because we knew intrinsically, primally, that we came here to do something.
Yeah.
To be part of this functioning organism called humanity, and help bring it life and help it evolve. And people have been lulled into this, what I call maintenance workers, where everyone's just maintaining a bunch of crap they don't need.
Yeah.
And so the upside to all of this is what I'd really love to shift to here, is that you're absolutely correct that America is the firewall for the rest of the world. So every immigrant, everyone who's escaped communism, and I have people from Falun Gong who've escaped torture in China, and they all say the same thing, like, this is the last stand. We are here to fight for you and with you, Americans, because we know what happens if America goes down. But what we have in this era that they have never had, if you go back to Mussolini, if you go back to Stalin, if you go back to Zedong, they used the people. They would be nothing. These dictators of our past had no power on their own. They all had to use, it was Mussolini's black shirts, it was Hitler's brown shirts, it was Lenin's red army, it was Mao's red guards. They always hypnotized the people into their cult and made the people do the dirty work. And when the dirty work was done, they eliminated those people who fought. And so, but what we have in this era that they never had before is the ability to do what you and I are doing right now, to use our voices to communicate, to wake each other up. In all the other points before of history, they had 1, 2, 3 at the very most state-sponsored channels that all told them one word. And so they had no ability to have any kind of communication to become dissenters. And right now we all are dissenters, to say we witness what our own government is doing in conjunction with some other governments. And we understand, like you said, they don't care about us. We are cattle. And because of automation and all the technology that's coming, we are now useless cattle.
Right.
But here's the possible upside that no one's talking about, Mel. Technology is not inherently good or bad. It just is. It's just technology. Just like food, you can misuse it all. Food is one of the number one things that's killing Americans right now, with obesity, right, and heart disease and everything. It's because of our lazy tendencies. And they even call it convenience stores, right? It's convenient. So we don't want to cook anymore. We want to be comfortable, and we want things handed to us. And that addiction to comfort and convenience is killing us. And so, you know, just by understanding that we have the ability, technology, I love technology. I remember when I'm old enough as a filmmaker to remember when it went from analog old film suddenly, you know, and then it went digital. Yeah. I remember all the purist filmmakers were having just a fit because
me too. Like, I was there too.
But then now I look at it and I go, it's so much better. It is so much better. You know,
I remember the panic when it went from like editing on Avid, and you were like, what? What do you mean I have to relearn new technology? Or when they put out the first Sony camera that could look like film, and we were all like, wait a minute. And like, look, and you were on the front lines of that, and you learned how to, again, with like what you're saying about technology, you said it can be used for good. I'm going to figure it out instead of fear it, because it was a lot of fear.
And that's where we need to take responsibility, because we enable this. We pay. Big Pharma writes the check for the big media, but we actually fund that organization every time we pay them with our attention.
Right.
And so as we're learning right now, there's some good stuff happening. As we see the boycotting of Target and all these other corporations that are losing $9 billion in a week, the people are realizing, oh, shit, we got some power here. If we just use it, right? And so this technology that everyone's warning us about, yeah, it can destroy us, but it can also potentially be the thing that sets us free.
Yeah.
What if all the automation is doing the slave labor, and it frees us up to be with our families, to be creative and create our own, what we actually knew as children we came here to create? What if it frees us up and gives us the time to actually do that? We can create that system. We just have to get these people who have other intentions out of the way, let them play their own game and devour each other. That's cool.
Exactly.
Go over there, play that game. But let's stop participating in their game. As if, you know, that's the only game in town.
Right.
What you said at the beginning of the show was, after my experience with 9/11, I came back in, I created the Elevate Film Festival for one reason. Because I felt like Hollywood was a league. And I reached a point that my metaphor at the time was, I said, you know, I'm tired of getting tackled, but I want to play in the NFL. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
And I realized, you know, as an athlete, I said, there's different baseball leagues. I can play a similar game with similar rules, but slightly different. Why don't we create our own league? And that was why we started the Elevate Film Festival. Because I said, I know I'm not alone. I know other creatives like you and people. We came here to do something good.
Right.
Tired of being slaves to the system. So let's create our own game. And now it's time to take that to the next level, to activate the creative spirit, the innovation and the brilliance and intelligence of all humanity to come together to say, you guys go there and play your own little destructive technocratic game of doom and gloom, and we're going to create something that we actually get to govern.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Elevate Films, Elevate Film Festival, I remember seeing it in the LA Weekly, like all the way back then. And I'll tell you what, it spawned a whole lot of other film festivals and a whole lot of other people around the world, and kind of started the decentralization from Hollywood that a lot of people don't realize has already happened. I see them holding on as tight as they can. What is bothering a lot of people, there's actually a writer's strike right now. You and I lived through the first one, which was a big deal because they didn't have streaming and technology and all of this. And it was a very small club. You only got to work if you were, you know, that select chosen person. You weren't really sure how it happened, and you just had to keep the work going. If it stopped, you know, then what? So everyone was basically a slave. And now there's a strike right now. But what's showing through this strike is they're striking over the wrong thing. When I look at what they're striking about, and I see it, and it is, you know, there's a lot of problems, but there's also AI, as you're talking about. And AI is threatening the creative industries, not just film, music, graphic design, art. And like you're saying, people are, it's all fear. It's all panic and fear, instead of that these are tools that, you know, we can't stop the tools, but we can stop the panic and fear and figure out how to use those tools. And at the same time, really protect what is sacred, which is the human spirit, the God-given unique talents that all of us are born with as individual unique DNA that comes only to one of us at a time. And so I think a lot of it is fear-based and it is a panic situation, but you also are creating a decentralized Hollywood. A lot of people don't know that about you in the background. Because of your lead, a lot of other people that are, maybe people don't realize, are bravely going out to different places. You're in Texas now, but Nashville and Oregon, and, you know, even I know a lot of people are going up to Canada outside where it's controlled, to find a new way. Because we were told when we were young, if we didn't go to Hollywood, then you could never be successful in this industry. And that is a complete lie. And now it's opening up a world that you're on the front lines of, where if you have talent and you have ability and you choose to use that, you do have a platform and you do have a place. And this is actually could be a true renaissance for art and filmmaking and music if people take advantage of that and break the model of, no, you don't have to be accepted by the cult of Hollywood to put out great work that people will see and will spread.
Well said. And thank you for your kind words, by the way. I really appreciate that. It really is that you just nailed it too, because it's, if you understand how much the Renaissance pulled people out of the dark ages, here we go. We're in the dark ages right now. Let's, what was the Renaissance? It was an era of creativity and new poetry. And they, with the, you know, the invention of the printing press, people had the ability for the first time to really, you know, disseminate new ideas to each other and do their own printing and sharing and mass copying. And so we have that now. It's called the internet. And so that's the printing press of today. And so let's use it wisely. Let's protect it. And never let them succeed in having us forget who and what we are. I mean, that's at the root of everything. And what you said about, you know, the AI situation and all the people panicking, I agree with you. See, it's if they were sovereign to begin with, but see, they're a slave to the system. And so so they're now vulnerable to this change. And on my end of it here, I use AI every day. It's fantastic. And it helps me write my voiceover. So it's like, but I use it. It doesn't use me.
So
I write a piece of voiceover. I put it into ChatGPT and I say, improve this for me. And it comes back and I'm like, amazing. That used to take my copywriters 2 days and $300 or whatever.
Right, exactly.
It comes back and you know, there's fallible parts of it and things that I would stay away from. And it's already got woke programming and things that, you know, you have to be careful what to ask it.
Right.
But if it's an intelligent system, it's, you know, and it's just another stage of computer technology. They can be very useful. You know, we have a section in the film about Karl Marx. Well, there's no real photography of Karl Marx that can be utilized. So we had the beautiful AI images of him and his actual wife and his children. And so we could go through this whole moment to teach people who Karl Marx actually was. And it was all AI generated. And it's stunningly beautiful.
Most people don't know he was a journalist, you know, and a disgruntled one at that. So there's so much about that you have in the movie that people need to learn. And what's scary, and I hate to go back to something that's scary to me, but you brought it up earlier about the enforcers in Mao's China, in Hitler's Germany, in Stalin's Russia, and other places where there were tyrants and totalitarian takeovers. And this is one thing I think people might not understand that you do understand. You have two amazing children I've met. I just saw them last week. They're awesome. And they remembered me, which made me very happy. But I have to tell you, I have studied this a lot. And what I'm seeing happening to the children, just to touch on this, because you do really get this part of it, and a lot of people don't, is the LGBTQ stuff, the gender fluidity, all this stuff that they're doing, and doing it younger and younger, which you and I have delved into, the younger that you can break a child's mind. the more programmable they are. And what scares me about what's happening to our children, regardless of the boycotts and this and that, I think there's another level to this where when I'm looking at Mao's China, because I think that's the most similar to what's happening here, if you really look at the pattern and the playbook, is I think what they're doing to our children, it has a much bigger purpose, and it's not what people are fighting over. I fear that our children right now are being psychologically manipulated to a place where they will, like you said, they're being told that God made a mistake with them. And not just that God made a mistake, but that their parents supported God's mistake. But the state, the schools, the teachers' unions, they're going to take care of you. They're going to be your savior. We love you. Even if your parents and God betrayed you and don't love you, we, the state, being the extension, being the teachers, will be your parents now. And most people don't realize that Mao, very early on, was replacing pictures of parents and parents' places with his own face. And the children growing up in China, very young, before the revolution, were being told that Mao and the CCP was essentially their parent. And we're having a lot of that now. And what I fear they're trying to do, and what we really have to wake up and understand on a new level, is to create a couple generations of soldiers. I talk a lot about how in the concentration camps, we often hear, which is horrific, about the victims and the torture and just the inhumane and just the hell on earth that was created. But it was actually men who created that, and that they, lots of people worked in those camps, in China, in Germany, in Russia, everywhere that there's been totalitarianism, there's been soldiers that have enforced this. You know, the Eichmanns that, you know, I was just following orders of my flag and my Führer. And I fear that a big part of this, which is why your series is so important, especially the current Great Awakening one, is that they're trying to take our children to then be enforcers of this insanity that they are trying to place us under. What are your thoughts on that aspect of what's happening to our kids?
Well, yeah, that's the game plan, you know, and that was exactly what Mao did. His entire Red Guards were enlisted from schools, from junior highs and elementary schools and colleges, universities. They were all a bunch of kids, and they had to carry his little red book that had all of his indoctrination within it, and they had to read it every single day. And going back, as you mentioned, like into Lenin's Russia, you know, when the children were asked, who's your father, they had to say the Soviet Union. And so they have to pledge their loyalty to the state. And so everything that's happening right now, and most of the people don't even know, most of the wicked people on the school boards, they themselves are in a state of really, it's mass formation, it's mass hypnosis. And what the movie that you saw in Miami was a very, very rough cut of mostly just the J. Edward Griffin stuff. It is a different movie now, and it goes really, really deep.
Good.
You know, but it really examines how they do that through psychological warfare, how they take our intrinsic primal desire for connection, our need to be, you know, like to be seen and to be witnessed, to be present with each other. And they distract everyone into a point of loneliness where people are separated and, you know, divided from each other. And then they give them the solution to that, which is them, which is the state, which is, like you said, well, we'll take care of you. They don't love you. We do. We accept you. And so this is happening all over the place. So even if you just look at the migration situation, right? It's like, right, come on in, open borders. No human is illegal. And they do all of that, put you up in a nice hotel or whatever. And all of that is to create a loyal base. That's what, right, it's all about. So then they, you know, they push all this. There's movements right now where they're trying to say that the whole food pyramid and the whole idea of eating healthy is, right, all based on white supremacy, and they're saying jelly donuts and all this stuff that they lied to you. These are just fine. And so what it creates is it enhances the amount of the obesity rate in America. And then they create the body positive movement. You're beautiful. We love you. This is the way to be. All those fit people, yeah, don't listen to them. Those are the privileged elite, whatever. And so we love you. This is what beauty is. And so now they create all these disenfranchised, unhealthy people who, and then they say, we are the ones who love and care for you. So, right, now they have this loyal base. But the upside even to that is people are waking up to it.
Yeah.
I have so many, I come from the far left, and I have so many liberal friends who are calling me and saying, okay, all right, all right, I see it. This is, they've gone too far. This is crazy. I can't believe this is the party that, and they all said the same thing, you know, like what Reagan said, like, I'm not leaving the party. Party left me. Like, I still have my same belief systems and all of that. But, you know, once they come after our children, you've crossed the final line for a lot of us, because there's nothing we won't do to protect our children. But they know that if they get into the minds of a child, they for generations, they have gone after people at the collegiate level, because they're the next workforce. They come in, they're the next CEOs, the next leaders of these corporations and what have you, the next politicians. And there's still hope for those people, because if you've had a semi-decent grounded upbringing, and then you have 4 years of a crazy professor who drills all kinds of Marxism into you, you can still come out of that. But when you attack a four-year-old, when you start molding their, you know, in the formative years, when their minds are just making decisions of what life is, and you start telling them this garbage, most of those kids will never come back from that. And so that's the thing that, above all, which is why my wife and I actually created our own homeschooling co-op here in Texas. Mm-hmm. And it's going amazing. So, because we don't want our kids in the system, we won't allow that.
Yeah, and it's happening all over the country. I love your wife. She's awesome. And you both are tremendous parents. And I know that a lot of why you do this is because of those kids. And I think most people have to start looking at it that way and stop looking at, because the distract and divide and everything is very superficial. My feeling now, also, you brought up what's going on with the illegals, other than the Cloward Piven strategy to implode our system, is really what you're saying. And I think people have to realize that they've gone through the cycles of these, like Hitler's Youth, or these, you know, Red Guards, where we had like the Antifa, then we had the Black Lives Matter, then we had the women's people, then we have the LGBTQ plus. We're about to have, I believe, an illegal uprising where they're not being given what they were promised. They're going to be in the streets soon talking about that they demand to have equal everything because they came here and they were promised something. And it's what's scary is that it's all generated by a group of, I believe, oligarch billionaires that have usurped our nation through NGOs and manipulation and banking manipulation, which you cover a lot in The Great Awakening. But I think that you think, which is they've overplayed their hand, and now they're this group at the very top. This I call them the puppet masters, but the oligarch elitists that are globally connected, including the ones from America, are fighting amongst themselves. Because you can see at the very top that, you know, the BRICS nations, China and Russia, as they are involved in this whole one world government plan, but are against the UK, US, NATO, and they're fighting at the top, which I think is a good thing for humanity, because, you know, they can't all be the top of the pillar, top of the pyramid, but we are seeing them. And I think that it's a very good time, not just for your movie, but for humanity to unite. And that's my last question for you. Besides, everyone must go see this movie. We'll put a link below. We're going to put the trailer at the end of this. But right now is the time to unite. Because all of this division is part of the plan, and it's all very manufactured. And I wish people would understand that. You and I have been all over the country talking to people in every corner of America, and I have met very few people that, if you just take away the three issues that they always use to divide us, that we might never meet on the middle on, there's hundreds of issues we do agree on. And I think that that's the big gift of your work, is that you really find the places that are universally connected. And like you said before, I say this a lot about the UN and the NGOs and the globalist cabal, is they use our compassion and our empathy and our desire to help others and humanity against us, to kind of shame us into being something we're not. So last words on how we can unite and what we should be doing as each individual our part right now to really bring us to a better place as a whole, rather than all separated.
Yeah, well, the one thing that we can all do, because it requires no, you know, additional resources other than what we were born with, and that's speak out, continue to speak out, and get past that fear of being rejected from your tribe. Because as people will learn deeply through Plandemic 3, The Great Awakening, this thing we call collectivism is at the root of everything bad. And collectivism actually stems from something beautiful, I believe. And that is, again, our intrinsic desire to be connected. But what happens when we are bonded by agreement, and that's what all these new mobs are about, you know, they're bonded by agreement. That's why so many people are leaving the left right now, because they're realizing that it's like, I agree with 98% of it, but the moment I say I don't think that biological men should compete in sports, I'm out of the tribe.
Right.
So it's a very fragile relationship you have with your community, because you know you have to believe, you have to check every single box. Not one can be in opposition to the unspoken collective agreement. And so it's a very fragile thing that leaves people feeling insecure in life, because they understand that if they just go out and say something on Facebook or whatever platform, they're probably going to get a lot of hate and people unfriending them. And I say, do it.
Yeah.
Because what's on the other side of that are true relationships. So do that faster than just do it now. Say what you feel, say what, share what you're seeing in the world, because what you're going to find is the people who you thought were your friends who aren't, they're only there because they're lulled into this hypnotic cult. They will go away and they might even attack you a little bit. It's okay. You can handle that. Trust me. You can handle that. What comes in its place are real people, like people who love you for you, people that celebrate the fact that you have a different opinion than they do, because it's interesting when people have a different opinion. That's how we learn and grow. And so we need to come back to that. And all you have to do is speak out and just keep saying, I don't buy this. Here's what's up. This is wrong. I don't like what the president just did. I think these people need to be prosecuted. I'm tired of the hypocrisy and the double standards. Like, keep saying what you see out in the world.
Yeah.
And the more that we do that, then the less power this cancel culture will have. I'll tell you, one of the best things that can happen to everyone right now, get canceled.
What's great about canceled. You getting canceled is that now they're coming after you to say that you're great again.
It's amazing. I was just telling someone yesterday, I said, all the negative stuff, like I just got listed in LA Weekly as top 10, one of the top 10 people innovating their industry. And I thought,
I know,
you gotta be kidding me. Like, there's coming full circle right now.
Yeah. And I saw it. I said to Rob, canceled. Look, they're courting Mickey Willis again. It's so great.
It's crazy, you know, and that's what happens, I believe, when you stick to your guns. I don't consider myself to be an overtly, you know, courageous person, any more than anyone else. I have learned that the bowing to a cult, because I also came from the New Age cult, and I had that experience of realizing, wow, that was, we came out to defend the Covington students, and that was the first time I realized, like, wow, that even though these kids are set up and they did nothing and they're 15-year-old kids and I have boys and I don't want them to be prosecuted and persecuted for something they didn't do. So shouldn't we just be concerned on telling the truth? No, it was very much tribally organized that if you say that, you are a Trump, far right, white supremacist, whatever. So I just said, listen, I'm not going to live. I'm not going to walk on eggshells around you people. No. I'm just going to honor the truth. And I believe in the end, the truth shall set us all free.
And you are 100% correct. I have to say, The Great Awakening is so far, I think, one of the best movies. No, in my opinion, probably the best movie that anyone that's watching this that has people, because there's a lot of people right now, I'd say 30% are on the cusp, like you're saying, of my friends too from the left are saying something is very wrong. And they're not really sure what, and they know it's not Trump, and they can't be that, and they know it's not this, but they're not really sure what happened or what is going on. This is the perfect time for The Great Awakening to come out, and for you that's watching this to not only watch it, share it with people. People are way more open than they were even 6 months ago. It's very clear that there's a panic going on the Great Reset side. And that is our chance to really make headway here. Mickey Willis, you know, you are a hero of mine. I could not appreciate you more. You are somebody that I look to, and I know, and no matter how bad it gets, that if Mickey Willis could live through it, I can too. I mean, because they came after you. I'm telling you, when I saw LA Weekly put you on as an innovator, I thought, oh God, they realize that they really have to change course, which is great. And had you not stood up for all of us, that would never happen. And that is a good sign. And you are somebody that I really cannot I cannot say enough about how much you've done for the entire movement, for the Great Awakening, not just here, but totally worldwide. So everyone, please, his movies are free. The Great Awakening is a must-see, a must-share. Mickey now, Willis, where else can people follow you?
Are you coming to the premiere?
Yes, we are. Yes.
You are.
Yeah.
Amazing. You're going to get to see the real full film. Wait till you see what we've added to that too. It's and I just got a note put in front of me here by my incredible wife that we have a handful of seats. It's been sold out for about 2 weeks.
Right.
And it's free. Again, I don't charge for any of this. And
I know.
Why don't I do that? I do that because this information has been stolen from the people and I just don't feel right about selling it back to them. So that's why it's all free. So the premiere is free and all of that. If you go to plandemicseries.com, apparently there's a handful of, we had some seats held for people that were trying to come from Europe and all over the world. And I think we've just reached a point where we said we're going to let them go now. And so go to plandemicseries.com. If you want to come to the live premiere in Austin, Texas, June 3rd. So just a few days from now, which makes me a little stressful. But if you can't come to Austin, Texas and be with Mel and I and so many other 2,500 other really extraordinary people will be there, go to plandemicseries.com and sign up for the live stream because the High Wire, Del Bigtree's incredible show, The High Wire, will be doing the live stream right there from the theater. And we have some surprises. We have at least two big ones
that
I can't wait to share with the people.
Well, you always bring surprises, let's be honest. Also, your book is really inspirational. It's an amazing story about how he ended up being this human that could withstand anything and keep marching forward. And also, you have a great line of clothing now that you can wear it on your body, how you feel. It's a real empowering line of clothing. So where can people find everything? Is it all on that website or are there multiple?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, because that's the only stuff I do actually.
Right. But it's worth it. It tells people exactly where you stand. I love that.
I had to create some kind of a revenue model because I certainly no longer have that with my films. And so we have a rebellion.com. And we have Get Fierce Now. And that is a new supplement to combat all of the wounded immune systems out there to not just rebuild and boost, but to restore our natural immunity. And it is really an incredible product. I won't go into the detail of how it was formulated, but I'll just say that there have been several formulators who have been telling us, I think it's the best one on the market. And so get fierce now, check that out. And then the Rebel Lion Threads is our clothing apparel, our apparel company. And during the height of censorship, this was the idea for this through my partner, Chris, and his wife, Rose, and my wife and I, we said, you know, if we can't say it,
right,
wear it. And so we started creating t-shirts and hats with these incredible statements on them, and they've become really popular. It's so cool around Texas. We'll be in stores and people will be wearing our merchandise. And so that's another way to speak out is to wear these messages. And it's nothing too shocking, too over the top, nothing that's going to get people beat up out there. But it's definitely stuff that we need to say out loud in the world. And so I thank you so much for bringing that up. I hope people go there and support that. And on our website, there's a donation button. If anyone cares to donate, this is how we make our movies, 100% donations, and it allows me to give them away. You mentioned my book. It is also free. I made a deal with my publisher. I said, as soon as you make your money back, the only way I'll do this book deal is if you'll allow me to give my book away. So the audio book is right there on the website and just download it. It's yours.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much, Mickey Willis. You are amazing. I will see you very soon. And God bless you and your family and your amazing children. You have been a big influence on my life. And a lot to do with me doing what I do is because you did what you did. I really appreciate it.
God bless you, too. I love you, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Breaking news, the president declaring a national emergency.
The new stay-at-home order.
We will shut you down.
Don't think you can get on a plane or a train.
This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
And we will take you to jail.
We've got to get them vaccinated.
Or we will keep you in a facility longer.
As the world was descending into synchronized tyranny, I began to ask myself,
How did they get everyone to go along with this?
Oh, it feels so good.
I know.
Obsessed with finding the answer, I began studying every moment in recorded history where masses of people acted against their own self-interest.
The only mechanism that could explain what was happening in society,
screw your freedom, you schmuck,
was what is usually referred to as mass formation.
Here we are now with an economy in crisis, but with an incredible opportunity.
Unprecedented opportunity
for a reset.
Your Royal Highnesses, distinguished heads of state and government, the future is built by us. We need a great reset.
When they say you'll be happy, what they mean is you'll be enslaved.
Today, we have the technology to hack human beings on a massive scale.
Who masters those technologies will be the master of the world.
Those who control the data control the future, not just of humanity, but the future of life itself.
Every aspect of our life has been infiltrated by people that do not have our best interests at heart.
There are forces using fear and isolation to induce mass psychosis.
I don't want you to be hopeful.
Environmental doom.
Fires.
I want you to panic.
Storms.
It will kill your children.
I want you to feel the fear I feel every day.
People are starting to wake up. They're starting to wake across the world.
I'm seeing people come together from all walks of life, finally saying enough is enough.
We didn't come here for no reason. We have a voice and we're here to share it.
We have to be the solution. We cannot rely on the media, the president, or whoever to fix these problems.
I would rather pick up cans on the side of the highway than to live out of alignment with my truth.
We're all being driven back to the dream.
As you see in the audience, Democrats, Republicans, white, black, everyone all in between, this is the example that they do not want to see, but they have no choice.
The masses of humanity have been slapped awake.
Open your eyes.
It's time to wake up.
This is the Great Awakening.
People cannot go back into the Matrix now. A lot of people are trying to. They can't.
Psst, pass it on.
Hey, Patriot pals. So happy that you're looking into gold and silver and protecting your savings for whatever comes ahead. Beverly Hills Precious Metals is our good friend, and we've been working with them for a long time. So you'll be getting a call from them. We'll also follow up here at the Mel K Show because we want to make sure that you're taken care of and you're protected. If you have any questions, please let us know. Right now's the time. There's so much information coming. There's so much chaos. We just want all the patriots out there to be sure that they are protected, they are moving forward, and that we get through the storm together and safe. Whatever may come, just know we, the people of the United States, will prevail. God wins, and protect yourself, and please get in touch with us if you have any questions. So Beverly Hills Precious Metals, they're the best. They'll be in touch. We'll be in touch. You be in touch with us. Let's do this together.